Here on downtown on a Monday afternoon. Well, the new automation system doing some quirky things there. Uh-huh. The things they don't tell you about. Let's get on the phone. I know how to make that work. Chad Finn of the Boston Globe joining us this afternoon. Hello there, Chad.
Hello, Rich. Against all odds, I'm here, so you did that right.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, new automation system. Throwing some wrinkles at me here. It's my first day flying solo with it. What could go wrong?
Oh, nothing.
No.
I expect you to be off the air halfway through this interview.
Well, there's a pretty good chance of that. How's your vacation going?
Vacation is complete back at it today. So you know how it is. Feels like you were never on vacation.
Yeah.
But it was a little too hot, too. You know, we just kind of hung around here. But, boy, 87 and humid every day.
Not a big fan of this. We were talking about during the break. I expect that week or so of it in August, but early mid-July, I'm not quite ready for this day in and day out.
No, we're supposed to live near the coast here where I am, and certainly feels like you're in the middle of Kansas or something right now. So I'm not going to long for the fall because I love the summer and it's not long enough, but could use a few of those fall weather nights here.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, the days are rough. That's one thing, but it's the nighttime. I'm looking forward to, 60 degrees, 58 degrees in the overnight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's perfect. Let's get to that here. We can have 81 during the day. I'll live with that. But, boy, does not feel like Maine this last week.
No, absolutely not. Well, we've hit the All-Star break for Major League Baseball. Tonight it's the Home Run Derby. Do you pay attention to that at all?
More out of professional obligation than interest. Mm. just seeing what the broadcast is like. Before I was out last week, I think my last media column, I talked to Carl Ravitch about a lot of things he had going on with ESPN Baseball. He's a local Massachusetts guy. I need him. So figured it'd be good to catch up with him. One of the things he does is called the Home Run Derby, along with the Little League World Series and the College World Series and the Sunday Night Baseball game. So he was anticipating this. I'm curious to see how the changes affect things. I don't think players will be getting worn out anymore and exhausted, which had happened a couple of times the last few years. So we'll see how it goes. But I don't know if I'd be watching it if I didn't have to be honest.
And no Chris Berman? No back?
No, it feels like he's still doing it, though, I guess, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's been a while. But, it might have annoyed people at the time, but it's pretty iconic because it comes up every year. Hey, Berman doesn't do it. Well, no, Berman hasn't done it for a while now.
He's too busy doing infomercials these days.
I guess so. What does he have? I haven't seen him.
I can't remember what it's for, but which tells you how memorable a spot it was.
Well, he's got his Sunday NFL online show with ESPN, which, gets the gang back together from the heyday a little bit. So good to see. Yeah, he's just from a media standpoint, he has always been a great guy to deal with, which pretty much is all I care about. Well, if somebody's accessible at this point, Boomer in his heyday was as big as anybody got. So I appreciated that about him, even if his shtick got a little great.
Oh, yeah. Well, the first time I met him, it was years ago at an award ceremony, and he came across the room to me, reached out that huge mitt of his and said, "Rich Kimble." "Yes." And he goes, "Chris Berman." "Oh, really? No, I had no idea. You from Bangor?" "Yeah, yeah." He goes, "Oh, have I got a story for you," and proceeded to tell a story that I cannot tell on the air about something he did as a young man in high school when he was at a summer camp in Maine and made his way up to Bangor for some entertainment. It was a great story. And he was not for print, not for air, no, but I always remember him fondly as a result of that.
Yeah, he was always a good guy for me to deal with, too. And still, he was part of that group a couple of years ago, I guess it was 19, when they were rotating everybody they could possibly think of into the Red Sox play-by-play booth alongside Castiglione, and Boomer did a bunch of games there. And was gracious to everyone at Fenway, which is just what you want to hear about somebody who's been a such a prominent figure in sports media for a long time and one of the most famous guys. It seems like he treated people right. So sounds like you had a similar experience too.
Mm. Chad Finn with us here on Downtown. Well, at the All-Star break, well, the Red Sox playing great baseball, 11 games over 500, only 4.5 games out of first. We think about it with players having a classic walk year season. Well, it's Alex Cora who's having the big walk year season right now, I think.
Yeah, I think you got to give Dave O'Brien some credit here, because at the end of yesterday's game, which was kind of encapsulated the whole first half of the Red Sox, where Duran had 4 hits and Rafael made a fantastic defensive play. The pitching was good, and Jansen got it done at the end, just came up with a big win to go into the break at a good spot. And Dave O'Brien afterwards, they had 3 questions with Craig Breslow, and one of the ones he asked was, why doesn't Alex Cora have a contract extension? So, the pressure's on the Red Sox to do this, but we have to remember the decision isn't entirely theirs. I'm not certain, and my colleague Peter Abraham's written this too, that Cora wants to be back, that he mentions family. I'm not sure what his family situation is in terms of where they go to school or what their plans are. But he talks about that a lot, and he's going to have options. You see what Craig Counsell got, a manager who's not nearly as accomplished as Cora, got to jump from the Brewers to the Cubs last year, reset the market for managers. I think it was $7.8 million. So Cora is going to have suitors, and if he decides he wants to live in a different place, the decision will be his. But the pressure is going to amplify in Red Sox ownership. If he doesn't have a contract here as the season goes on and on, even if he's kind of complicit, maybe not the right word there, but part of the reason for why he doesn't have one is his own goals and hopes for the future.
Well, I give Dave O'Brien credit too. Early last week, they brought up Cora's comments about, gee, I wish we had more of a home field advantage like we used to, and that people were coming here to see baseball and not just for the Fenway experience, which was a pretty strong shot across the bow at Sam Kennedy and ownership there. And OB and Kevin Youkilis were all over that. And then I was shocked at this on Nesson. They even cut to a shot of fans walking out late in the game, right after Sweet Caroline. And both OB and Youkilis were all over that. I was impressed.
Yeah, you know what? The kind of, I don't know, turning point, but the thing that jumps out about that was the series earlier against the Yankees, where it was overrun. Fenway was overrun with Yankees fans, which can happen sometimes, but it's usually when college is in session down there. When you have a lot of college students from New York go over and get those. You know, at the end of last year, they were $9 tickets to Fenway. You could, you'd see a lot of opposing fans there, but this was different, where it's college isn't in session. It's just Red Sox fans not going, and so it felt like a home game for the Yankees, which is just embarrassing. And even if you're as detached from the Red Sox as ownership seems to be right now, that's got to be something you look at and say, what are we doing wrong here? And then you kind of watch how it's played out with the Red Sox, where they were in that stretch where they won one game, lost one game, won one game, couldn't get anything going, and then they've just gone on this tear in July. I think they made up 9.5 games on the Yankees in the standings, and just look like a legitimately good team that fans can get behind. Hopefully that is motivation enough and success enough for ownership to look at this, see the embarrassment of early in the season and how this team overcame that, and go out and allow Craig Breslow to get them the help they need at the deadline, because this team has really earned that opportunity.
Well, yeah, I would say barring a complete collapse after the All-Star break, they really don't have a choice, do they?
I don't think so. And one of the questions, again, talking about the interview after the game yesterday, Breslow really, for the first time, implied that he's going to go out and get help. I don't know if that means he has clearance. But, I've worked on it a little bit today. I'll probably run later in the week. But what they should really do is go out and essentially take the approach they took in 2018. Obviously, much different team. The 2018 team was a juggernaut. But they traded like a low-level minor leaguer for Steve Pierce, who ended up being kind of bench hitter they needed and a World Series MVP. they traded Jalen Beeks for Nathan Eovaldi, whom we didn't really know much about other than that he was hurt all the time and bounced around for a bunch of teams. And I think you could say he's a really well-liked Red Sox player. I would like to see Breslow go out and make those kinds of trades where he identifies exactly what they need, a right-handed bat, a right-handed starting pitcher, and go out and get those guys the way that Dave Dombrowski did in 2018. Maybe in one case, it's even the same guy because the chance that Baldy is available. And if he is, that should be the number one target to get back here. But I think it's pretty cut and dried what they have to do. And if he has clearance to do it, that's great.
Celtics making all the right moves in the offseason. The old gang is back. They've got just about everybody set for next year. But now what about this sale? It sounds like maybe all is not as it seems, that the guys who have that 49% may end up getting the bigger chunk of the team, so we might not see a huge transition?
Yeah, everything I've heard is that Steve Peliuk is really going to make a hard push to become the guy. And he came in with Wick in 2002 and has been... I think people looked at him as the co-owner, even though Wick and Wick's father in particular had the most of the stake in the Celtics. But everybody around the team hopes that it's Peliuk and he can get a group together to buy the girl specs out and become the guy, because that would be continuity. But we really don't know what who's going to get involved with this. I mean, it's one of the three or four most desirable franchises in professional sports. You weren't expecting it to come up for sale. Obviously, there's an enormous payroll here, but there's also really a peak of fan interest right now. So there's going to be a lot of filthy rich people involved in trying to buy this team. Hopefully it's as close to status quo as it can be in the end, but we'll see how it shakes out.
Did you get to see any of the Cooper Flagg video during your vacation?
I did, yeah. We watched the last 2 minutes, and my colleague Adam Himmelsbach was out there and talked to Cooper. I think he said only the first day, only two people, two reporters talked to Cooper, as Adam and maybe Tim Bontemps from ESPN. And then Cooper goes out and has that phenomenal practice where he looks like he was on the wrong team.
Yeah.
And, you know, should have been on the other team the way he was playing. So, and all of a sudden, you know, that's just, it's been the whole pattern with Cooper where every time he's challenged, he meets and just blows right past the expectation. And he did it again with the select team to the point where, you know, even the guys like LeBron James, Steph Curry aren't surprised by anything that he does now. So it's just been remarkable to see rapid ascent over the last couple of years with this latest step being maybe the most impressive.
Back to sports media for a moment. Fox released their football crews for the coming season. No big surprise with Tom Brady on that number one crew as expected. Now, I was saying on the air the other day, with the Patriots being wherever they are, maybe we won't see Brady at all, but I got to think they put him on at least one Patriots game, right?
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? Especially, you know, maybe if they're a little bit better. I haven't looked at the schedule to see what games might end up on Fox later in the year. But, you know, if they surprise people, if Drake May plays a little bit early and they win a couple and people start thinking he's going to be a real good quarterback, that'll enhance their opportunities. And I'm sure Fox would love to get Brady doing a Patriots game here in year one at some point if they're a compelling enough team. And, of course, you know the schedule. It's not strictly AFC-NFC divide anymore between Fox and CBS. So it's entirely possible they could end up with an AFC game over there on Fox that Brady calls. But just looking into this and starting to think about writing about him going into the season, I think he's going to be really good at this, just with some of the stuff you've heard about the not only the preparation that he put in, but how he's been really willing to be critical of individual players in the league here on his podcast, on appearances like with Cowherd, and the stuff he's chosen to do so far. He has not shied away from having a strong opinion on things, and I think that bodes really well for what it'll be in the booth.
I'm with you on that. I wasn't sure whether he would actually even follow through on this, but I think now that he's committed to it, it feels like he's approaching us the same way he approached being quarterback, that he's going to put every ounce of effort into it. And he's a smart, likable presence out there and knows the game as well as anybody. I agree with you. I think he's going to be good right from the get-go.
I do, too, yeah. And, you know, it turns out he was telling the truth. I think there was some skepticism when he took that year away, that the kind of the gap year from retiring to actually going into the booth. And people are like, he's never actually going to fulfill that contract. He's putting it off. And he said it was for preparation and to talk to all the people that he wants to talk to and just study John Madden is one thing he said specifically, and see how he explained football, not just, you know, like the Maddenisms, but how he talked about the game at an accessible level, stuff like that, that Brady's really put thought into. I think we're going to see that when he's in the booth. Now, there are going to be people who won't like him because they weren't Patriots fans. They don't want to see Tom Brady's face after all, you know, all the pain he gave them, you know, you're a Bills fan or a Jets fan or whatever. But I think if you're relatively impartial about it, he's probably going to be somebody you end up liking spending a couple hours with on Sunday afternoon.
And Greg Olsen understands the situation, I guess. I mean, he'll be on that number two team with Joe Davis.
Yeah, it's tough for him. I mean, he's acknowledged that he didn't want to move out of that number one spot, but he doesn't really have a choice. But at least it works out pretty well for him where Davis is a good broadcast partner. Sounds a lot like Joe Buck to me, which I consider a really good thing. I know people get annoyed with Joe Buck sometimes, but I really like him. Joe Davis. And Olsen is a really, really strong number two team. And then because Olsen was so good last year calling the Super Bowl with Kevin Burkhart, when he becomes a free agent, when this contract is up, he will probably have really appealing offers to maybe go into a number one spot elsewhere, whether it's on that Amazon broadcast, maybe, you know, Chris Collinsworth maybe retires at some point. Maybe Olsen ends up over on NBC. We'll see how that plays out, but you know, he's established himself as an excellent color analyst. So even though he's kind of getting the raw end of the deal this year, I think it's going to work out really well for him in the long run.
Chad Finn of the Boston Globe. Chad, good stuff. Thanks for visiting with us. As always, I hope the return to the work world goes smoothly and that you get some cool sea breezes down there soon.
Well, I'm typing way slower than I was a week ago, so I don't know if that's ever going to come back. I'm getting old now.
Yeah, you're up to it. I know you'll rally when it cools off a little.
There we go. I need a deadline. That's what I need.
That's it. Thanks, Chad.
See you, Rich.
Chad Finn with us here on Downtown on a Monday afternoon.